Any time is a good time for broiling thick, juicy steaks, indoors or out. What kind of steaks? Tenderloin, porterhouse, T-bone, sirloin, or rib steaks. They're all naturally tender and excellent for broiling in the top USDA quality grades, Prime, Choice, and Good. Prime is the top grade, and Choice is almost as high in quality. For more information, write How to Buy Meat, Agriculture Radio, Washington, 20250.
Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight, when On the Town with Mikey D will be here with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene. 855-915-9636 is a telephone number, emergencies only, please. And be warned that at some point during this next hour, I'm going to have to very abruptly switch over to music and take a break, because in addition to running the board, logging the music, talking to you, I have to let in the On the Town DJ for tonight, because Joel is out at a gig tonight. So, fun. Anyway, moving on. Donald Trump is wrong. I said it. Donald Trump is wrong. If you are a Donald Trump supporter, please understand that Donald Trump is wrong. No matter how much you may agree with everything that he's done, or how much you may disagree with everything that he's done, we should all agree that Donald Trump is wrong. And Donald Trump has been wrong since he first announced his candidacy and said, I am going to put up a wall. Now, we can make the argument that Donald Trump is the accidental president, that he never actually intended to win. But now that he has, he has continued to put forward this idea of a border wall, saying, we need a border wall. We need a border wall. We need a border wall to stop the immigration that is coming into this country. Donald Trump, when it comes to the border wall, is wrong. And if you believe that a border wall is going to solve the problem, you are wrong. It gives me no joy to tell you that. But the point is, if you want to stop people from trying to enter the United States, a wall is not going to do it. A wall will never work. A wall will never be a solution. A wall is nothing more than a symbol and another obstacle to be overcome. In the same way that the obstacles placed on the beaches at Normandy did not stop determined Allied forces from overtaking the German positions on the clifftops, a wall will not stop determined immigrants from getting into the United States of America. There is a simple reality about immigration that everyone needs to embrace and understand if we're going to have any kind of a meaningful conversation about this. And that simple truth is this: you have lost the battle. You have lost the battle to keep an immigrant from entering this country by the time they have taken the second step away from their front door. Once they have reached the resolve to take that second step away from their front door, it's over. You cannot win. If you put a wall in front of somebody who has just spent all their life savings, dealt with thousands of miles of walking, risked death to get here, do you really think a wall is going to stop them? No, it's not. You lose that battle by the time that immigrant has taken the second step away from their front door. And the solution is to find ways to keep them from taking that second step from their front door. Which means, I don't want to talk about presidential politics. I promised you guys I wouldn't. But it means you do something like what Joe Biden talked about during the first Democratic debate, which is you invest in those nations where the immigrants are coming from. You find ways to improve conditions in those countries so they don't want to come here, so they aren't compelled to come here. Donald Trump wants to put up a wall. Wall will never work. You can put up walls all day, all night. It's not going to stop anyone. It will not stop anyone. Some of you may remember what was going on at the entrance to the tunnel under the English Channel, the Channel, a couple of years ago, where these massive migrant camps showed up because the English would not allow the migrants in. The migrants just sat and waited, knowing that sooner or later, they'd die or they'd get in. One of those two things would happen. Ultimately, the French came along and relocated them. So I don't know where the French relocated them to, but they got rid of the camps because the immigrants were starting to terrorize truck drivers trying to get through the tunnel. And local residents had had enough of hundreds of people sleeping rough in their backyards. It was getting to be a health concern. It was getting to be a violence concern. I think France wound up absorbing a lot of those immigrants. But here's the thing. If I've taken that second step away from my front door, I'm gone. I am going to get to America or I'm going to die trying. And your wall, Mr. President, is not going to stop me. Nobody's wall is. You have to win that battle to stop immigration before an immigrant takes the second step away from their home. Donald Trump may be trying to move this in a different direction and seems to have discovered a better solution. It's not the right solution, but it is a slightly better solution to try and deal with the humanitarian crisis taking place on our border. From Associated Press, Trump moves to effectively end asylum at southern border. Now, I'm not sitting here to tell you that this is a good thing or a bad thing. It is what it is. This is the latest solution that has come out of the White House. Reversing decades of U.S. policy, the Trump administration said Monday. Did you hear anything about this, by the way? Did you hear that the Trump administration completely changed the asylum rules on Monday? No, you didn't. Because you were hearing about tweets and you were hearing all the Democrats were calling Donald Trump a racist and everybody was lining up in back of Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, who is absolute poison to the Democratic Party and is going to cost them not only the House of Representatives, but the presidency in 2020. But did you hear anything about this? This is sweeping U.S. policy that affects you personally. And all you heard about on Monday were tweets. Tweets don't affect you personally. This does. Reversing decades of U.S. policy, the Trump administration said Monday, it will end all asylum protections for most migrants who arrive at the U.S.-Mexico border. The president's most forceful attempt yet to block asylum claims and slash the number of people seeking refuge in America. Second part of that sentence is the key part. Slash the number of people seeking refuge in America. We have lost the ability to handle this. The situation at the border is out of control. No one is happy about what's going on down there. No one is happy about it. And when Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez comes out and says, you're demonizing people and you're throwing people in concentration camps, please stop. Please go. First of all, go sit in a history class. Go learn some history. Because the United States 2019 is nothing like Europe 1939. Nothing at all. We're not even in the wheelhouse. And the ignorance that fuels a statement that would call these concentration camps, what this is a situation that we can't handle. There are too many people. There are too many people coming. And you can't just let people into your country. You can't just let some guy show up with seven little girls and be like, oh yeah, sure, come on in. Because then he goes and he sells those little girls and they become sex slaves. Not saying that happens all the time. I'm saying that is a possible outcome. You can't have people walking in who have been kicked out of this country before. You can't have gang members coming into this country. We need to know who is coming in. We need to know where they're going. These people arrive on our border with nothing. All they have is clothes on their back, and if they're lucky, a bottle of water. That's all they've got. What are you going to do with them? In some cases, they have put them on buses and dropped them off in the middle of cities. And then they stand there and they're like, well, where do we go now? What do we do? They don't know anybody here. They have no place to go. There are a number of agencies that have been working with the federal government to try and deal with this overflow. But what we are seeing right now on the southern border is unprecedented levels of migration. And the infrastructure that was built during the Obama administration that has been expanded by the Trump administration is not enough to keep up with the number of people coming. More people are coming than we can handle. No one, no country on this planet can handle 100,000 migrants a month. It's that simple. So he's trying to slash the number of people seeking refuge in America. Not because he's a racist. Not because he doesn't want anybody coming to the United States. Not because he hates immigrants. Because we have a crisis on our border. People are dying because our government is incapable of caring for them. No government would be capable of caring for them. You could throw millions and millions. You could throw $1 billion at this problem. You could throw a couple $1 billion at this problem. Where do you house these people? How do you feed these people? How do you make sure they get the medical care that they need? Imagine 10,000 people showing up at a hospital emergency room. It would be pandemonium. And that's what we have on our border. And that's what this president is trying to stop. Democrats may see it otherwise. Democrats can scream racism all day long. These are the same Democrats, by the way, who back in February and March, when Immigration and Customs Enforcement and Homeland Security were screaming and begging for help with the situation on the border, referred to it as a crisis manufactured by the president. These same Democrats who are all going down to the border now and posing for the cameras with tears in their eyes and say, oh my God, how could America ever have come to this? These are these same people who in the winter of this year referred to the border as a manufactured crisis. Heads up, Democrats in Washington, you have zero credibility on this issue. None. You had an opportunity months ago to do something about this, and you called it a manufactured crisis, and people have died since then. Not that I think the Republicans are doing anything any better, but the Republicans at least did not lie to the American people and say that there was no border crisis. The Democrats did. And this is Massachusetts. Nobody's going to listen to you when you say a bad thing about a Democrat, but these are facts. These can be verified. We'll go on. The new rule expected to go into effect Tuesday would cover countless would-be refugees, many of them fleeing violence and poverty in Central America. It is certain to face legal challenges, and the lawsuits already started up today. According to the plan published in the Federal Register, migrants who pass through another country, in this case Mexico, on their way to the United States will be ineligible for asylum. The rule also applies to children who have crossed the border alone. The vast majority of people affected by the rule are from Central America, but sometimes migrants from Africa, Cuba, or Haiti and other countries try to come through the U.S.-Mexico border as well. There are some exceptions, including for victims of human trafficking and asylum seekers who were denied protection in another country. If the country the migrant passed through did not sign one of the major international treaties governing how refugees are managed, though most Western countries signed them, a migrant could still apply for U.S. asylum. Mexican Foreign Relations Secretary Marcelo Ebrard said Monday that his country, quote, does not agree with any measure that limits access to asylum, end quote. Mexico's asylum system is also currently overwhelmed. We know this. The Mexicans are in the same boat that we are. Mexico's sitting there saying, what do we do with all these people? The United States is sitting there saying, what do we do with all these people? You have to stop them from taking the second step away from their home. Once that second step is taken, it's done. They're on their way. They are going. They are coming. And Mexico has actually been cooperating with us quite a bit on trying to deal with this. And if you dig into the history of it, they understand what's going on. They understand that this is a humanitarian crisis. They want to help, and they have been as helpful as they can be. Donald Trump called them out, threatened tariffs, all the rest of that, because he wasn't getting as much out of them as he wanted. And Mexico stepped up. Mexico has done what it can. But the ultimate solution is not to say, hey, you're stuck in Mexico. And by the way, this doesn't just apply to Mexico. If you're in London trying to get on an airplane to come to the United States, you can't do it. You have to stay in London. If you're in any country trying to get on a plane to come to the United States, you can't do it. But the only thing you can do is if you're in Cuba, you can get in a boat and you can come over to Florida because you're not traveling through another country and you can get asylum that way. But you can't go to Cuba if you are a non-Cuban and come to the United States. You can't go to Mexico if you are a non-Mexican and get to the United States. You see how this works. What the president is trying to do is find a way to stop these people from getting to our border. He's trying to work with Mexico to say, look, the Mexican border is as far as you're going to get. Is it worth it to you? And then it falls on the Mexicans to enforce their border and basically say, look, you're not getting asylum in Mexico. There's no room in the United States right now, so you're not getting asylum there. Turn around. I doubt many people will, because they have nowhere to go. They've gotten to a point where they cannot live in their home countries anymore because the conditions in their home countries are deplorable. There are a certain amount of economic migrants, but I think most of the economic migrants have been deterred by this point. But the asylum argument and the refugee argument in the first place is suspicious. We're not talking it because none of the countries that these people are coming to the United States from, none of these Central American countries, are war-torn. Venezuela's got some stuff going on. You can make an argument for Venezuelans being refugees. We're not talking about a situation like Syria, where 2 million people had to get up and leave because ISIS, Russia, and the United States were waging a horrible, bloody war against each other and leveling cities and killing everyone in sight. Those were refugees. Refugees are people who are coming from war-torn areas. Refugees are people who risk execution for their political beliefs. Most of the people coming to the United States are economic migrants. And this has been very well documented. Are there some refugees mixed in there? Yes. Are there some legitimate people who are under threat in their own countries? Yes, particularly those coming from El Salvador and some people coming from Venezuela. Are there way more economic migrants than actual asylum seekers? Yes. Are we capable of dealing with the crush at the border right now? No, we are not. Something has to give somewhere. And the Trump administration is doing what it can to try and find a way to get something to give somewhere. The problem is, once you have taken that second step away from your door, it is too late. It is too late. You have to find a way to get people to stop crossing their own borders. Once you've left your country, you're never coming back. How do we stop people? So this is a short-term measure. I don't believe the president or anybody in Washington considers this a long-term solution. When they say there is a crisis unfolding on our border, there is. You've seen the images. You've heard the stories. This isn't because the president is racist. This isn't because America's racist. This isn't because anyone is devaluing brown people or saying these people are lesser. It's because we have 100,000 people a month trying to get into this country. And we don't have the resources to accommodate that. No one does. No one does. So we don't want more people dying. If we don't want more people stuck in limbo for months on end, we have to find a way to stop the flow. And this is the president's latest attempt to do that. Congress is never going to give him the money to go support El Salvador or Venezuela. We're not going to support Venezuela as long as Hugo Chavez is running things down there. Congress isn't going to give Trump the money to invest in Guatemala. He's not going to give Trump the money to invest in Brazil. He's not going to give Trump the money to invest in El Salvador, any of these places. Which would be the actual solution here. That's what you have to do. You have to stop people from wanting to leave their country in the first place and come here. And there are ways that we can do that. And we've done it successfully in the past. The wall is never going to work. Putting the onus on Mexico helps. But it's not a long-term solution. I don't think anybody in Washington believes it's a long-term solution. We'll see what the courts have to say. This is a pretty big reach by the president. And honestly, I don't think it's very likely that it's going to stand the legal test because it's such a big reach. But you never know. The courts have been favorable to him in the past. And they may be favorable to him again. He's somewhat in the right direction. He's not on the right path. I'm not going to say he's right about this. He's in the right direction. In saying by the time they get to the U.S. border, it's too late. Yes, Mr. President, that is correct. By the time they get to the U.S. border, they are not turning back under any circumstances. They are going to enter our country. Stopping them at the Mexican border before they cross into Mexico may deter some people. If you've got Mexican military sitting on the border saying, nope, 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 turn around, turn around, turn around, not getting in. Maybe that deters some people. But a lot of people won't be deterred by that. Until people stop wanting to come here, you are never going to solve this problem. That is the only way. It is that second step away from your front door, at which point this battle is won or lost. Because by the time you take that second step, you are resolved. First step, you're still thinking about it. Second step, you're on your way. You're heading for America, and nothing is going to dissuade you. So we need to work with the countries where these immigrants are coming from, and to the extent that we can. I mean, you can't work with Venezuela. There's nothing you're going to do about Venezuela. And as I say, Venezuela, you can make a legitimate claim that we have asylum seekers coming from Venezuela, because Venezuela is barely functional at this point. They don't have food, they don't have water, they don't have energy half the time. Venezuela is coming apart. So if they want to come here and claim asylum and say, hey, we're on Maduro's bad side, and they're lining people up and shooting them down there, can you let us in? That's okay, because we have backed the other side. And if we are directly involved in the political conflict, then we kind of have to say, yeah, you're an asylum seeker, you can come in. Short-term solution at best. We'll see where it goes. WMFO Medford on the Intel Mikey D coming your way at 9 o'clock tonight. There have been a couple of stories involving Antifa over the last 3 weeks now. Because we were off last week and I sat on this story for a week because we were heading into the 4th of July and had a lot of fun things to talk about. For those who aren't familiar, you should be, by the way. You should look this up and find out who these people are and what they stand for. Antifa began in Europe and is a loosely organized, one might say disorganized, and not in the sense of, oh my God, they're all over the place, but in the sense of there is no central organization. So they are an unorganized, disorganized, loosely organized, however you want to call it, group that opposes fascism. And apparently we need them in America right now because there's fascism. I don't know where fascism is in America. I haven't seen any lately. And I look, by the way, I keep my eyes open for fascism at all times because I am deeply opposed to fascism. I am deeply opposed to anything that threatens our freedoms and our republic and the workings of such. I am a true believer in what Ben Franklin said, walking out of Independence Hall in Philadelphia, when an old woman walked up to him and said, "What kind of government have you given us, Mr. Franklin?" And Ben Franklin's reply was, "A republic, if you can keep it. And the second part of that quote is the most important part. If you can keep it. We've managed to do that for over 150 years now. See if we can keep that going. This may be my moment to break away for a second. Hang on one second, and we will get the answer to that question. And that is, in fact, my cue to go downstairs and let Andrew in. So we'll take care of that right now. And when I come back, we are going to talk about what is happening with Antifa. Take advantage of this opportunity to look them up and be like, hey, who are these people? And why are they doing this stuff? Because it doesn't make much sense to me. This is WMFO Medford. WMFO Medford 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. Derek Gary with you until 9 o'clock tonight on the Tell Mikey D, coming your way with everything you need to know about the Boston music scene at that point in time. 855-915-9636. Please, dear God, don't call. I am out of breath from letting Andy in. We move on. Before Sum 41 interrupted us with Summer, which is a good song for this time of year, we were talking about Antifa. And I was still getting into the definition of Antifa. This is basically a loose, very lightly organized group of far left wing activists. You may have seen them on television. These are the people who show up at protests wearing masks, wearing body armor, carrying bear spray, throwing milkshakes, punching people, hitting people with bike locks, setting fire to things. That's Antifa. And not only are they allowed to get away with this, they're praised for it in some corners of the media. There are people on the left, and there are people in the mainstream media who think Antifa is not that bad, who think it's okay. And on one level, I can look at this and say, you know what? Fine. You want to go LARPing on the weekend and play political warrior and maybe get your face bashed in. Who am I to stop you? But when the media starts condoning this and the violence starts turning up, we have a problem. So there are a couple of stories that came out in the last couple of weeks. The first involves a journalist by the name of Andy Ngo. Andy Ngo is a conservative, I'm not going to deny, he is a conservative, right-leaning columnist, mostly an opinion columnist, occasional journalist. He writes for Quillette, which is a journal of right-wing thinking. They tend to be center-right, but some of them are fairly far-right over at Quillette. I am not a Quillette reader. I am familiar. I've read some of their stuff. I'm familiar with their general reputation. Andy Ngo is a gay, Asian-American writer, occasional journalist, who has been documenting phony hate crimes and the activities of Antifa in the Pacific Northwest. So back in June, he shows up at a rally in Portland where he knows Antifa is going to be. And the following happens. This from the Daily Caller, chosen not for any particular bias or lack of bias. We know who the Daily Caller is. They are a right-leaning news outlet, but because they have the story and they have it in a concise format that will allow me to explain. Journalist Andy Ngo, who frequently covers Antifa rallies, was attacked during a street protest in downtown Portland on Saturday. This is a documented fact. Video exists. Footage of the attack shows a group of masked protesters swarming Ngo, an editor for Quillette, punching him and pelting him with milkshakes. In a recording he posted after the attack, Ngo is seen with injuries on his face and neck. He told police his attackers stole his camera equipment. A reporter for the Oregonian also recorded the incident, noting he did not see how it started. It appears that Ngo, who lives in Portland, was recognized at the event. F you, Andy, one woman is heard yelling. She did not say F, she said the full word. Go home, Andy Ngo, one man says. Get the F out of here, one attacker is heard shouting at Ngo, who is Asian. Yeah, F you, another yells. Ngo often covers Antifa and has been assaulted before while covering the left-wing group. He says on his Twitter profile that he's hated by Antifa. He said May 7th he was assaulted at his gym in Portland by a man he recognized at Antifa rallies. He was also attacked with mace by a woman wearing a mask at a rally May 1st. A suspect has not yet been identified, and the Portland Police Department, police should be in quotes, over in Portland, did not immediately respond to the Daily Caller News Foundation's request for comment. By all means, and absolutely, the word police at the Portland Police Department and on the sides of all their squad cars, on their letterhead, on all the rest of that, it should be in quotes. Because they're not really a police department anymore. They are a stand around and let people do what they want to do department. There's a difference. You know, they're not so much about protecting and serving as they are staying back out of the way. It doesn't help when your mayor is also the police chief. Something you might want to fix there, Portland. So, let's start with Andy Ngo. Andy Ngo actually wound up in the hospital with a brain injury as a result of the attack on him at this rally in Portland. There has been a split response on the Andy Ngo story because people on the far left say, yeah, you go Antifa, he got what he deserved. People in the center are saying, wait a minute, you just beat up a gay Asian journalist. Doesn't that sort of fly in the face of your diversity message? Doesn't that sort of fly in the face of your peace, love, and happiness, and can't we all get along message? Well, Antifa isn't beholden to any of that. Antifa is a group of basement-dwelling thug cowards who get together, put their masks on, put on their body armor, and go LARPing. They are live-action role-playing political warriors in brown shirts and just beating up anybody who gets in their way. A lot of people have said this never should have happened to Andy Ngo, and I happen to agree with that, okay? Under no circumstances is violence ever warranted unless you are trying to defend yourself from someone being violent toward you. Andy Ngo did not do that. Andy Ngo attempted to walk away and run away. Andy Ngo attempted to get police to intervene on his behalf. Police said they would not. But who is Andy Ngo? Andy Ngo, and this is where Tim Pool and some of the other folks who have covered this get it wrong. Because everybody looks at this and says, look at Andy Ngo. He's a completely innocent bystander. He's an innocent journalist who got beat up by Antifa. Well, that's not entirely true. Andy Ngo is a journalist. Some of the time. He is not a card-carrying credentialed journalist in the same sense that Jim Acosta is. But he is a journalist. He is a reporter. He is at this rally in his function as a journalist. But his job as a journalist, as he has defined it, is to expose Antifa. Who is Antifa? A bunch of basement-dwelling, mask-wearing cowards who don't like people videotaping them when they commit their crimes. So here's what happens. Andy Ngo shows up at the LARPing event where I guess some Proud Boys or some other right-wing whoever's are going to square off against Antifa, sticks himself in the middle of it, and then is surprised when he gets hurt and is surprised when the police don't do anything. Of course the police aren't going to do anything. The police have been told in this situation, in any situation like this, do not get involved. If the police see a bunch of people beating up on Andy Ngo, they have to let it go. Because if they insert themselves, now people are going to start beating up on the police. And now the police have to respond with force. And if the police start responding with force, the next question is, when does it escalate to lethal force? This is something you should keep in mind if you're thinking of attending one of these rallies. Whether you're thinking of going as a spectator, whether you're thinking of going and participating on one side or the other, the police are not there to protect you. Understand that walking in. The police are not there to protect you. And if you don't understand why the police aren't there to protect you, I suggest you go read about Kent State. I suggest you go read about the 1972 Chicago Democratic National Convention. The police do not want to be involved in a full-scale riot anymore. You do not want the police involved in a full-scale riot because, believe me, that will end with a tremendous amount of bloodshed. So if you go and if you participate in one of these events, you have to understand the police are not there to protect you. The police are there to contain the event. The police are there to make sure that everybody who's come out with their sticks and their batons and their body armor is only going to fight each other in this one part of town. And if you choose to go be a part of that, then you are exposing yourself to risk. You have signed a waiver just by being there that says, it's okay if you beat me up. It's okay if you crack my skull. It's okay if you stab or shoot me because I chose to be here. And you cannot turn around and blame the police for that. You put yourself in that situation. Andy Ngo put himself in that situation. They know who he is. He knows that they know who he is. The violence against Andy Ngo is wrong, unquestionably. But you can't put yourself in that situation with people who want to hurt you and say, I'm a journalist, leave me alone. It doesn't work that way. Any journalist for any major news organization who goes and covers a war understands the risk. They know that they could possibly get killed. They know that they could get maimed. They know that they could get captured and tortured, beheaded, as Daniel Pearl was. So you can condemn the violence against Andy Ngo. You can condemn Antifa. But you can't treat him as an innocent bystander. And you can't say, oh, he's just a journalist doing his job. Journalists who are just doing their jobs get death threats. I know people who are in the industry. You're going to cover the mafia. You're going to cover the Boston mob. Sooner or later, the Boston mob's going to send somebody over to knock on your door and tell you to knock it off. And maybe you're going to have somebody follow you around. Maybe you're going to have to get a police escort back and forth to your house. These are the risks that you take as a journalist. And if you walk into that situation where the riot is unfolding and try and run and hide behind the police, they're going to push you right back in. And they're going to say, hey, we're not here to look out for you. All right? You showed up. You signed up. And keep that in mind if you ever think of getting involved in one of these rallies, because you are on your own out there. They will probably stop the mob from killing you if they can. But short of that, you're entirely on your own. Now, why is Antifa... This is the latest in a series of problems with Antifa in Portland. And it raises a simple question. Why do these events keep happening in Portland? Why do we keep having these confrontations between Antifa and the right wing? There is a simple answer here. Because these people are allowed to wear masks. When you watch Antifa, if you watch the video of Andy Ngo or any of the other things, they're all wearing masks. They're wearing bandanas. They're wearing motorcycle helmets. They're wearing all kinds of stuff. You want to stop this from happening, all you have to do is pass a resolution. Oregon City Council, no masks during public events. You come to a public event, you come to a public protest, you cannot wear a mask. You tell Antifa they can't wear their masks. You have police standing at the edge of where the event's going to take place, arresting people wearing masks. None of this, no, you can put it in your pocket, or you can turn around and go home. You show up with a mask, you go in the wagon. You go on the bus, and you go to jail. You only have to do that once, and they'll stop showing up. Because they are cowards. They are criminal cowards. They don't want their faces seen. Because if people knew who they were, they would be thrown out of their friend groups. They would lose their jobs. They would lose their place in society. And they'd be subject to criminal charges. Ban the masks, you get rid of Antifa. There were a wide range of reactions from the media on this. Somebody involved with the ACLU, I think it was the ACLU, actually tweeted saying that, Andy Ngo wanted this because it's good for his career. And basically condoning the violence and saying that Andy Ngo invited the violence. The Anti-Defamation League turned around pretty quickly and disavowed that statement, which came from one of their members, someone fairly high up in the organization. I think it's the Anti-Defamation League. It's a couple weeks ago. I may be wrong about this. Joe Biden. Nobody likes Joe Biden. According to the New York Post, the Democratic presidential candidate believes violence directed at anyone because of their political opinions is never acceptable, regardless of what those beliefs might be, a campaign spokesman said in a statement to the Post. He believes freedom of expression is fundamental to who we are as Americans and that Andy Ngo's attackers should be identified and investigated. Hear, hear, Mr. Biden. And also, hear, hear to Andrew Yang and Eric Swalwell of California, who have also come forward and said the same thing. Hear, hear to Senator Ted Cruz, who wants a federal investigation into what happened in Portland and wants to know why the police aren't doing anything and wants to know why Antifa is allowed to run wild. This is what we need. I said earlier tonight, we have to stand up to this. The silent majority that sits by and says, yeah, it's not a big deal, or I don't want to stick my neck out, I don't want to get involved. We have to stand up to this. And I salute Joe Biden and Andrew Yang and Representative Swalwell and anyone else. Oh, I believe they're the only Democratic candidates who have come out against this. I think the rest of them have just quietly slunk away and not said anything. Elizabeth Warren, deafeningly silent. Kamala Harris, deafeningly silent. Pete Buttigieg hasn't even said anything about this, which surprises me. Because usually you would have heard something from him by now. He may have condemned this, and it just wasn't part of that particular story, which ran a week ago. But Buttigieg tends to be moderate, down the middle, can't we all get along kind of guy. There was another story that took place this past weekend, and I'm going to ask you, we're going to play a little game here called What Did the New York Times Get Wrong in Their Reporting? Because this comes from the New York Times. Man attacking ICE detention center is fatally shot by police. So the background that you need on this story is that a 69-year-old gentleman by the name of Willem Van Spronsen committed suicide by cop in Washington State on Saturday night. His particular choice for committing suicide by cop was to drive up to a detention center where immigrants waiting to be deported were being held, armed with a rifle, and to start throwing what have been described as incendiary devices, I am going to guess Molotov cocktails, at a propane tank, at which point federal agents shot and killed him because he was attempting to blow up a detention center, which would have killed a lot of people. So he got his suicide by cop. Here's what the New York Times had to say. The police fatally shot a man who was attacking an immigration detention center in Tacoma, Washington on Saturday morning, the authorities said. The man who was armed with a rifle was throwing unspecified incendiary devices at the Northwest Detention Center, according to a police statement. The man, identified by officials on Saturday afternoon as Willem Van Spronsen, 69, of Vashon Island, Washington, continued throwing lit objects at buildings and cars, the statement said. Remember, we're playing the game of what did the New York Times get wrong here? One car was fully engulfed in flames, said Officer Loretta Cool, a spokesman for the Tacoma Police Department. Mr. Van Spronsen also attempted and failed to ignite a commercial-sized propane tank attached to the center, said Sean Falla, the resident agent in charge of the ICE Office of Professional Responsibility. Quote, this could have resulted in the mass murder of staff and detainees housed at the facility, he said. These are the kinds of incidents that keep you up at night. Officers arrived around 4 a.m. and called out to Mr. Van Spronsen, who was wearing a satchel and had flares, the statement said. Shots were fired that resulted in his death, though Officer Cool could not say whether he had opened fire. Mr. Van Spronsen was declared dead at the scene. He died of multiple gunshot wounds, according to the Pierce County Medical Examiner. No officers were injured. We're playing the game. What did the New York Times get wrong here? Did you notice a certain phrase coming up over and over and over again in this? The authorities said, the statement said. The statement said. They didn't actually report this. They took a couple press releases from the police, strung them together, didn't call anybody, didn't verify anything, and called it a story. This was an attack by an armed citizen on a federal facility. And the New York Times chose to rewrite some press releases and call that news coverage. Do you think, as an American citizen, that a fellow citizen launching an armed attack against a federal facility is a big deal? Maybe worth a reporter or two? Or something that, you know what, we could just take the thing off the wire, move some things around, and that's good enough. I would say that's a pretty big story. I would say that an armed leftist, even if he is committing suicide by cop, which he was, He left behind a manifesto on Bandcamp, which is an 8-song album, and sent a letter to all of his friends basically saying goodbye. It's a suicide note. I've seen enough suicide notes in my time to know what one looks like. Even if he committed suicide by cop, he attacked a federal facility. And the New York Times can't even bother to write anything about it. It gets worse from Fox News. The self-proclaimed Antifa militant who was killed Saturday by Washington State Police as he attacked a local Immigration Customs Enforcement detention center was seen in a recent CNN program that critics say glorified a radical left-wing movement. Willem Van Spronsen, 69, sent a manifesto to friends the day before the assault in which he wrote, "I am Antifa." And now he is lionized by members of the left-wing group as a martyr. They've been doing this. They've been going on Twitter and talking about his glorious sacrifice and what a wonderful martyr he is. He also appears to have been a part of a May 5th episode of CNN's United Shades of America with W. Kamau Bell. The heavily promoted CNN show featured Bell explaining the redneck revolt, which identified as gun-toting liberals who defend the Second Amendment and seek to battle the alt-right and neo-Nazis. Bell called them good guys, according to going to a gun range with members and even questioning why more white people didn't share their viewpoints. Here's a simple answer, W. Kamau Bell. Most white people aren't looking to violently overthrow the government. Most white people aren't looking to commit acts of violence against other people. Most white people don't want to own guns. and would never think of pointing a gun at somebody else. And certainly wouldn't go and try and kill a bunch of innocent migrants by blowing up a propane tank to make a point. CNN, ladies and gentlemen, Antifa's chief defenders, chief enablers, and you wonder where this violence comes from. The good news for CNN is that their ratings are right down there in the crapper where they belong. So they're going to have to change tactics pretty soon. But in the meantime, silent majority, I know you're out there. If you're watching CNN, understand, this is what they want. This is who they praise. People who try and kill innocents who attack a federal facility so they can commit suicide by cop. It's WMFO Medford.
If you're a single man under the age of 35, you'd probably like to know what the ladies are looking for on an online dating site. A guy who had a few drinks and later got pulled over for buzz driving. See, that could cost you around $10,000 in fines, legal fees, and increased insurance rates. And doesn't a guy who's back living with his parents but calls them my roommates just scream, Mr. Right?
Buzzed, busted, and broke. Because buzz driving is drunk driving. A message from the National Highway Traffic Safety Administration and the Ad Council.
Everything is awesome. Everything is cool when you're part of a team. Everything is awesome when we live in our dream. Everything is better when we stick together. Side by side, you and I gonna win forever. Let's party forever.
WMFO Medford, 91.5 FM. It is The Big Picture. On the Tell Mikey D will be coming your way in less than 5 minutes. But before that, what's hot? My favorite thing from the past week. Would you like to stay in one of the world's finest hotels? Head to Somerville. Travel and Leisure magazine placed the Row Hotel Assembly Row at number 44 on its list of the 100 best hotels in the world. Featuring an indoor pool, fitness center, sun terrace, and easy access to Encore Casino and the Lego Discovery Center. This hotel operated by Marriott is the only one in Massachusetts to make the list. Personally, I would prefer to go check out the Rabbit Hill Inn in Waterford, Vermont, which finished at 27th and is in a much nicer setting. You won't see the Mystic River Bridge from the Rabbit Hill Inn. You will probably see it from the Row Hotel at Assembly Row. And the inn at Willow Grove in Orange, Virginia, came in at number 24. Those were the only three hotels on the East Coast, on the entire East Coast, that made it into the top 50. Now, you're probably thinking, oh, there's got to be New York hotels in there. There's got to be Washington hotels in there. No, there are, but they were at the upper end of the list. So by the time you get down here, these are like really good, really special hotels, and we happen to have one of them literally minutes away. So book yourself a staycation. Go see the finest of what the parking lot at Assembly Row has to offer. Because that's pretty much, you got a river on one side and a big parking lot on the other. But apparently the hotel in between the river and the parking lot, one of the best you can visit. Go check it out, the Row at Assembly Row. Michigan. There's a novelty sign that says, "Welcome to our ool. Notice that there's no P in it. Let's keep it that way." Macomb Township may want to buy a sign that says, "Welcome to our L." The town had to close a community pool operated by the Buckingham Recreational Facilities Association and did so by posting this notice. "Someone has been defecating in the pool. Due to the frequency over the past week, we believe this is intentional. This is not Michigan's first dance with serial park poopers. In 2014, police in Ypsilanti dealt with a person pooping on park slides." I don't know what you're doing out there, Michigan, but stop dropping trow in the pool. Stop dropping trow in the public, on the slides. I mean, just go find a bathroom. Don't poo in the pool. Welcome to our L. Notice there's no poo in it. Let's keep it that way. That is just about all the time that we have for this week on the Towel. Mikey D is going to be coming your way in just a second now. Remember, this Saturday, folks, seriously, we joke around about the weather around here a lot. It's going to be, this is the real deal. It's going to be 99 degrees. It's going to be really, really humid. It's going to feel like it's 100 plus. I know I sweat like a pig when I walk, just standing outside in weather like that. So be very, very careful if you're going to be outdoors this weekend. Stay hydrated. Stay in the shade. Do what you can to keep yourself cool. Shea Spillane will be back next week. I will be back next week. Want to say a big thank you. Shout out to the Boston Red Sox for having Voices of Hope sing the national anthems of Canada and the United States on Monday night. It was an honor to be a part of that, an experience I will remember for the rest of my life. And great visibility for a wonderful organization that is doing a lot in the fight against cancer. We'll be talking about that some more in a couple of weeks. But for now, on the Towel, Mikey D here on